So again, Techen, thanks a lot for dropping in on the podcast today. Really looking forward to chatting with you and exploring this conversation today.
Well, thanks, Adam. Happy to be here.
Great. So what I thought would be really helpful for everyone listening today is to explore really how we can use every situation in our life to really grow ourselves, to grow our own good qualities and so forth. And I think it'd just be very helpful for people to explore this period of your life and how that's helped you, in particular this period of your life where you spent time in prisons teaching meditation.
Yeah, sure. So a little bit of background. I started practicing Buddhism in 93 at the Toronto Center, and started teaching a little bit in this town called Kingston. And in Kingston, there's 9 federal prisons in the area. And in 98, I both became a Buddhist monk and moved to Kingston to try to start a center there. There was a community there that was really interested in learning, and starting a center. So I went there, and pretty much immediately upon arrival, there were some students that were coming that were working in the prison system. And one was working in a pretty intense federal prison called Kingston Penn. It's closed now, but a lot of interesting characters at that particular prison. And so he said there was a Buddhist that was in the prison. And interestingly, he was asked, because of his anger problem, he was asked to do an anger management course. And he was refusing, and he wanted to talk to a Buddhist monk. So I happily went in. And that was the beginning of my prison journey. I went in. I remember going in feeling quite nervous, because it's quite a daunting experience, going into this prison. And he said he was in the laundry area, and I was going to meet him. And so there was a big gated door, big steel door. And so I was getting ready, and the door opens up, and there's this man with a Tibetan scarf, like a blessing scarf, with his head down like this. And so I just took the scarf and put it over his head and gave him a little blessing. And he looks up and he just said, "Pretty young for a lama," because I was only 29 years old. And so that was sort of the beginning of my experience. And so we ended up having this dialogue, and he was just being really adamant that he didn't want to do this role playing of practicing, trying to figure out where his anger was coming from. He doesn't have an anger problem. He's a Buddhist. And I tried to really emphasize, you're the only Buddhist in this prison. And, we're all teachers. Actually, we teach by example. I mean, you need to show an example, because nobody knows what a Buddhist is like. And being angry at everybody because of not wanting to solve your anger problem is not a good look. And he said, "Well, I'm not doing it." And he started getting more agitated, and I was trying to calm him down. And then he said, "Well, you're not, according to our tradition, you're not even a proper Buddhist. I'm a proper Buddhist." And then I started noticing myself getting a bit agitated. And then at one point, where the two of us are, arguing about overcoming our anger problems. and I remember having this realization, of people being real mirrors for ourselves, and just thinking, gosh, me being irritated at him not practicing sincere, virtue is me not practicing sincere virtue. It was a real wake-up call that I think I'm going to be learning a lot in this aspect of, I think these inmates are going to be showing me a lot about myself and, a learning journey. I think I did eventually convince him to try to solve his anger problem. So that was sort of the beginning of the journey. And then since then, there were 9 prisons in the area. So I was eventually invited to many different prisons.
Did seem to me, from what I understand, that you were actually in those prisons for quite a few years.
Yeah, I ended up doing it for about 9 years. Probably personally, there were different students in our center that were teaching in prisons. So we were reaching out to quite a few. But I became the Buddhist chaplain for the region. But I was able to go to different prisons and help in various ways. And you're right. I mean, I think I definitely went into the prisons not you can't go in feeling like you're some pure person and you're helping, you know, the really, you know, degenerate population or something. You know, in Buddhism, we understand that we're all struggling with the same delusions. It's just a matter of degree. You know, I struggle with, you know, anger, uncontrolled desire, ignorance. So do you, so do they. It's just a matter of how high it goes on the dial, you know, at different times. And so just understanding that we're all in this together, we're all suffering. And, you know, the function of a delusion is to make your mind uncontrolled. So of course their minds become uncontrolled and they cause people suffering, and there's consequences to that. And it was really wonderful that when I would go to the prisons, the guys that I would see, they were the ones that had some wisdom understanding that. They understood that there's something they need to work on, and they were really open to change. And, you know, they wanted to learn about their mind. And so, I mean, obviously there's many inmates that were, you know, are into, you know, feeding their delusions, but these guys were really wanting to change. And at that time, it was really wonderful. Tarpa, the publishing company of Geshe Kelsang's books, they would give me books that were just slightly damaged, maybe not suitable for sale, really introductory books like, How to Transform Your Life and 8 Steps to Happiness. So I was able to give these guys these books and then just give real introductory teachings. And then they'd come back the next week and we would discuss. One of the prisons that worked really well was, it was a maximum prison, but it was an assessment area. So in the federal prisons in Canada, if your sentence is more than 2 years, then you go to a federal prison and then you get assessed at this federal prison. You're in a cell for 23 out of 24 hours. You're double bunked. You don't have your amenities and you're being assessed psychologically and everything to decide whether you're going to a minimum, medium, or maximum. So there's a lot of stress and you don't know who you're bunked up with. And so they would come to these weekly classes. So I could keep it introductory because they're only there for maybe 3 to 6 months and then they'd move on. So I could just teach about how to overcome anger, how to practice patience, how to keep a peaceful mind, just giving them real mind training techniques that they could bring into their daily life. And that was, you know, really a special quality, you know, and very inspiring to see them put it into practice.
And if somebody has that wish in their heart, I want to change, I want to see if I can change, it must be very kind of liberating. I mean, I'm sure that was quite a journey to get to that for most people. It would be definitely for anyone, but in that particular context and the intensity.
Definitely. As I say, the ones that would come to the class, they did recognize that there was something off in the way that they were relating to things. A lot of what I would teach would be, because of course in prison and in daily life, we're constantly encountering things that we don't want to experience, you know, constantly. We're double bunked in that situation. They're double bunked. They don't, with somebody they don't know, they don't want to be with. And so just how do you deal with that? Like, how do you handle being with somebody that you don't want to be with? And so, of course, the mind will get agitated and the mind will get frustrated and start to blame the other person for their suffering. So we would talk about that, like, you know, practicing patience and trying to differentiate between a person and what they're struggling with, like their anger, that they're not their anger, and to understand that maybe they're coming from a place of suffering, and even try to have compassion for them, like to try to understand them a little bit more so they don't automatically get angry. And so this one inmate was just telling me this story. He said that he was bunked in with this young kid that just seemed to have a chip on his shoulder, real attitude problem, you know, just angry all the time. And he said, I've got one rule, you know, no TV before 11 o'clock. And so what does the kid do? Turns the TV on before 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock. So he said, and he's telling this in front of, you know, other inmates in the class. And he's so, you know, I calmly turn the TV off and I just tell him no TV before 11 o'clock. Next day, he turns the TV on again, 10 o'clock. So I turned it off again. Now, third time, I don't need to tell him. I'll just take the TV, smash it over his head. No TV, no roommate, no problem. So I was getting ready to, you know, take him out. And he's telling us, and I'm just listening. And anyway, we're at dinner, and I was talking to this other inmate, and he was reminding me about what you were saying about maybe trying to understand the person a little bit more, to understand that maybe they're coming from a place of anger, which is an uncontrolled mind, and they're not in control, and maybe they're going through stuff. Maybe talk to them. So we ended up chatting, and turns out he had a worse life than I did. You know, that he was struggling. You know, he was abused as a kid, similar to the way I was, and you know, and there were so many factors involved that made him who he was. And I just saw me in him, and so we became friends. Anyway, so we've got a TV, and he's still alive. And I was just sitting there, just my jaw dropped that, you know, what mind training techniques, you know, that the Buddha gives, you know, what it can do. It can just block that pattern that is so well worn, that mental groove of, you know, unpleasant feeling, it's you, and then acting without any, you know, without any reflection, and just giving them that pause just to reflect and just to think what's going on can save lives. And, you know, it was really, so that was somebody that really wanted to change and then changed. Just when you get that one little shift in your mind and you realize you don't have to automatically go with those impulsive feelings, that's such a special realization. I mean, we all have that when you actually take a stand against your own anger and replace it with patience or even with compassion. You just think, this is magical. One of the things that would happen a lot that I would have to practice, but the inmates really had to practice, was, you know, I'd show up for a week of classes and the guys really look forward to it. I mean, you only get 1 hour of yard and then maybe some psychoanalysis or something, and then you get to meditate with a monk. And so they would really look forward to it. But for whatever reason, it happened a lot, for whatever reason, the guards just wouldn't open their cell door. And sometimes I would just be alone, like nobody's getting out. And so I would just do my own practice. And the chaplains that would help me would be so frustrated, you know, that they invited me. And so we would talk about patience and, you know, in a Christian tradition or something. And just so there's a lot of patience that you have to experience. But the guys the next week would come and they would be talking about how, you know, it's like they purposefully don't want me to come. You know, I was just sat there just so upset. So, you know, just to give them options by just thinking, well, this is the hour for meditation. This is the hour to train. So my cell door is not opening. I'm meditating with the monk. He's down there. I'm up here. He's already taught me some meditation. I'm just going to meditate. And so my happiness doesn't depend upon the cell door opening or closing. My happiness depends upon inner peace. And I've learned some methods, so this is what I'm going to do. And some of the guys were doing that, and we found the doors opening more, you know, because they weren't getting the rise maybe that, I mean, I don't know what the motivation was, but it did seem to, they did seem to be able to come more, but they felt like they felt empowered by being able to train their mind and control something they could control. Like when you're in prison, you can't control anything external, but you can control the mind. And as you said, the real prison is in our mind. And so if you can gain these techniques to create some space in your mind and look at different options to practice patience, like even that phrase from the book, How to Solve Our Human Problems, if something can be remedied, why be unhappy about it? And if there's no remedy for it, there's still no point in being unhappy. Like they were using that as a mantra, because the door's not opening. I can't remedy it. I don't have the key, So what point is there to get unhappy? And so they would just, that gives you that space, even just thinking that, you just get that space. So they would just sit there and meditate. And again, they would get these little victories that really gave them a self-confidence. Cause a lot of the guys, you know, they do what they do because of delusions, but also a low self-worth. And just to have a feeling of a habit, a habitual way of thinking being stopped in its tracks, and a positive way of thinking And calling that being a virtuous rebel, really, really empowered them. It was really special. We would explore the ideas of taking this time to become a better person, which is really what the word penitentiary originally meant. Originally, it was a recognition that you engage in these crimes because your mind had broken away from, in a Christian context, your connection with God and your connection with virtue. And so they would, penitentiary meant get yourself alone, get some spiritual guidance so that you can be a better person in society, a reformed person of society. And so we were kind of exploring that, like, this is your time to weaken that selfish mind that's just dragging you down and not allowing you to be the person you want to be, and just acknowledging it, not identifying with it, but just realizing, I don't need to think like this. Instead, focusing on just having real, genuine love for your kids and for your partner, so that when you're on the phone, you're there for them, and just enjoying that space of being there for them and just loving them. And they would have these light bulbs would go off, like, that was a really enjoyable experience, just cherishing them, being there for them. And so they would have these, I guess they were just getting these glimpses of alternatives, alternative way of being, alternative way of thinking, which I think that's why we're all drawn to these teachings, because you can think differently. You can, be the person that you really, we all have the potential to be. And as you said, we all have incredible potential. Like, we call it Buddha nature, this limitless potential for love and compassion, no matter who we are, and patience. And to give these guys a little glimpse of that was really inspiring for me, because I just thought, well, these guys are in really tough situations and they're trying. And it would really encourage me. I mean, I'm in the big prison, as we all are, but it would inspire me to do better as well. Yeah.
We have this saying in Ireland, I'm sure you have it in Canada as well. It's like, they're a bit wild, but they have a heart of gold. That kind of saying. And I think it's like that for you, I'm sure, in that prison context, because you're obviously looking at it from that frame of reference. And more as time goes on, we look at people through that lens.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think I was able to notice that. Like, it's an individual journey. Like, we all, it's our own mind. We have to work on our own mind. But that connection, when guys would share their small victories, and that they were trying to think differently and trying to tease out their pure potential. And you, as a teacher, we have to see that in us, and we have to see that in others. Like, you can't, it's so important to see that these guys have potential. They have incredible potential. It's just being clouded, like you're saying. And then when they share these little, their positivity is starting to shine through, and they're able to relax in that space and share that, which is quite impressive to share that with a bunch of other guys. And then for that to be something that is admired, like, just shifting, not just being tough but a different kind of tough. I think in How to Solve Our Human Problem, he says, you're not being strong giving into your delusions. It's actually being weak. If it's easy to get angry. I mean, it would be easy for him to smash. I mean, we might think that would have been a bit beyond us, but for him, it was easy just to smash that guy, with the TV. But real strength is him taking a stand against that well-worn mental groove, and to share that and to inspire each other with that is so important. I think that's why in Buddhism, community is so important. We call that Sangha, where like-minded individuals are working on their own minds, but also coming together and learning together, meditating together, and sharing their experience together. I think that's really, really important. I mean, a lot of people today are really interested in meditation, and maybe they get apps, and just their whole experience is just with their phone and just an app, which is wonderful. I mean, they're getting their individual, some experience of inner peace, but you really need that other aspect of coming together and meditating together and interacting with one another and sharing what works, what doesn't work, because it's we're all in this together, as you said. We're all struggling, and that's what I really find so helpful. We all wish to be happy. We all wish to be free from suffering. We've all got these three basic delusions, and many on on top of them, you know, ignorance, uncontrolled desire, and anger. And we have real methods to do this, but it's also new. So we're trying to help one another. So even with the inmates, it was brand new, but even in our community, we're still exploring and still understanding. And so it's very inspiring to see people gain some experience in those conditions and share that. So that's why it's like always just a mirror for my mind, you know, just, yeah, like I've got potential for amazing good qualities, but I also have the potential to get frustrated or upset, you know, and not to sweep that under the carpet, but just to take this opportunity to dig and to learn and to use community to help.
And I often feel that when I chat to friends and stuff, they say, like, every day when I put my head down, I think, what was that all about? What was that day all about? Because we're talking about a physical prison, but life can feel incredibly imprisoning unless you develop some deeper sense of intentionality, some deeper sense of meaning and purpose to how you live your day. And I guess your experience of being in the prisons is when some people choose to do that in a physical prison, everything can begin to shift. But we can choose to do that, everyone listening to the podcast today, but we really need to get to that place.
Yeah, I think people are looking for that. That purpose, like what is the purpose of this life? And just to, I was always amazed at being exposed to this limitless potential that we have, that we have a mind, everyone has a mind, and it has incredible potential. If you can love one person, you can love 100 people, you can love all living beings. And what limitation is there to the mind? The mind can, it has no limits, and meditation is the method to expand the mind in that way. But with that purpose, then I think Geshe Kelsang says in one of the book, I think in New Eight Steps to Happiness, that anybody who has even a limited idea of how, even a small idea of how big the mind is, the capacity of the mind, the bliss, the happiness that we're capable of developing in order to benefit others, just will have no interest in these superficial distractions, you know, that we just escape into just to not look within. So it does take that courage. It seems like in our society we're just escaping. We get some unpleasant feeling and we just want to escape into social media or into various distractions. But that's why I was inspired with these guys that were able to have that courage, which we all need, to look within and get past that smoke screen of habits and unpleasant feelings and just look, you know, and how to solve our human problems. He talks about, you know, a few unpleasant feelings in the mind is no great catastrophe. It's just a bad storm. And to have that ability just to look at what's going on in the mind, look at those habits and decide you're going to not follow them, change for the better. Like the Kadampas used to say, to live a spiritual life, you just need to harm your delusions as much as possible, identify them, which is tough, and then reduce them and remove them, and benefit others, help others as much as possible. And that can give us real purpose. And we would talk about the power, going back to that first guy that I met, you know, the power of being an example. Like, you know, that saying, be the change you want to see in the world. These guys were trying to be the example. Like, they were teaching by example, teaching an alternative to, you know, to violence, to deal with their problems. And, you know, they would use just patience or use having a good heart, developing compassion, keeping a peaceful mind in the face of difficulties and showing that example. And some of the guys would turn to them as role models, you know, but in a good way. And that gives real purpose for them, to show that example of having compassion. That's what I really found with Buddhist teachings is how to develop compassion for people that, you know, are obviously engaging in harmful actions. That's such a, because if you see somebody causing suffering to others, it's going to give rise to something in your mind. I don't think it's neutral. So it's either going to be anger or compassion. But to have compassion, you need some wisdom. You need some different ways of thinking, like understanding the power of delusions that's causing this person to do what they're doing. Like, nobody in their right mind would cause suffering to themselves. But, you know, when they cause suffering to others and themselves, they're harming themselves. And so they're not in their right mind, and have compassion for them, or, you know, understanding, you know, cause and effect, a bit of, you know, there's some teaching on karma, just understanding that, you know, they're creating future suffering for themselves. And this allows you to have compassion for others that are causing suffering to others. And that's huge. And I think we need this in modern society. You know, it's just too easy it's so easy to get angry at angry people, like I did in that first situation, you know, and that's not a good example, and it's not a good teaching. And I think from that first interaction, I was thinking, I need to think differently. I need to be the example that we need in this world. And you know, that's where I find hope and inspiration, is that if many people start doing that, start taking a stand against their own delusions, start developing their own love and compassion, the more you work on your own mind, the more you realize how hard it is and how others are struggling, and you have more compassion for others, and you can be more of an example for others. And it's an inner revolution, I think, that's just happening person by person, just quietly. And I think that can change the world. I mean, it's not in an instant, but it can really change the world. And so that's where I find hope, because the inmates can do it, we can do it, you know. I think one of the main things is just giving me the confidence that we can change, like that I can change, that, as I said before, I think it just gave me hope that we can do this. You know, the Dharma works, you know, like these spiritual teachings work. And just realizing that, yeah, just that we're all, I love the all encompassing aspect of Buddhist teachings, that we're all in this together. We're all in prison, out of prison, we're all wishing to be happy, wishing to be free from suffering. And we're all struggling with the three main delusions, these three, you know, and self-centered minds. And so we're all in this together. And you can have this mind that wishes everyone to be free from suffering and everyone to find peace and happiness, and give people the methods to do that. And to see that in prison, and to see them handle adversity, that I don't know if I could handle. Because sometimes you get this romantic view, like, oh, you know, maybe I should go do some retreat, solitary retreat, you know, in solitary confinement, just show that. It's like, no, I wouldn't last, you know. It's really harsh down in there, you know, in these prisons. And these guys are almost forced to work on what they can actually work on, which is to change their mind. And I think we all have to come to that space, that the only thing I can really work on is my mind.
These people, eventually, they do become our teachers. And like, that's what I'm getting from listening to your story today. I feel like they're still your teachers, because you're like really moved, obviously, by this period in your life. It was a long time, 9 years, but that was quite a while ago. And you're still obviously learning an awful lot from it.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, I think everyone can be a spiritual teacher. And so your family, your, you know, the people in your center and the people you work with, once, you know, that's a real wonderful experience, just to be able to learn from, to see everyone as a spiritual teacher. And I think in the beginning, I think in prison that really helped. In the beginning, because I didn't want to go in, as I said, like feeling above anybody. That, I mean, even in Buddhist teachings, we know that, you know, the mind has no beginning. And so that whole saying, been there, done that, has very deep meaning in Buddhism, because, you know, anything these guys have done, I've done in the past. I haven't done it in this life, but in the past I've done. So just to stop any feeling of judgment, and instead to have respect for them, and to I mean, of course, not condoning their actions, but to appreciate that they have this wish to improve and to develop their mind, and then sharing with me their experiences and being teachers for me, even if sometimes maybe they might not agree. And we get into a little bit, well, like that guy, you know, just there's so many there'd be instances of being challenged. Like sometimes, like there was one guy I was working with one on one. He was in a little bit like solitary in that same famous prison in Kingston, and this well dressed man walked behind me, and I kind of recognized him, or he seemed familiar, and so I asked the guy I was talking to. I said, "Who was that?" Because he was wearing a suit, and he turned out to be one of the most famous serial killers in our country, and immediately, you know, that mind of just thinking, you know, like having some judgment. And he said to me, because I was giving not only books, Geshe Kelsang's books, but also some meditation tapes. And so the guys would have some tapes that they would listen to and use. And he said, "Oh yeah, I gave him some tapes." Yeah, so he's listening to your meditation tapes and just catching that mind that just, you know, thinks, but this is one of the worst people, you know, in our country. And then realizing he needs Dharma too. Everybody needs, you know, if this brings some peace into his mind and in that peaceful space, an opportunity to reflect, because that's what often they don't have the opportunity to do. A lot of guys, when they're meditating, they create that space in their mind to reflect, just to step back and see these patterns and who they are and what's going on. And that gives them this the safety and the space to maybe develop some genuine regret and a wish to change. And that's quite special. So just understanding, you know, even in the cruelest heart, you know, the cruelest person or something, there's that potential to change. There's that Buddha nature. And if this happens and he changes, then that's wonderful. And so that was a real test, you know, because I didn't like that guy. And the whole country didn't like that person. This person's quite famous. But to think, actually, you know, he's just like everybody else. He wishes to be happy. He wishes to be free from suffering. And he's got so much suffering coming through his negative actions and negative minds. And if he can work on his mind, then that's great for him. That's great for society. That's great for everyone. And it's just, it tests your, you know, your mind. Like, we can develop compassion for everyone. And I really think our society needs this. You know, we need to learn to have compassion for everyone, no matter, because sometimes I would talk with friends and they would say, "What, they have TVs? They shouldn't have TVs. They shouldn't have anything. They should just be punished." You know, like just like that punitive mindset. But, you know, just understanding that they're already punished because of, you know, they're tormented by their mind and they've, you know, there's consequences to actions and they're going to be experiencing incredible suffering now and in the future. And we wish no one to suffer. We wish everyone to be happy. And these instructions can help them change for the better. And this is what we want. This is what we need.
I think it's lovely to kind of round this conversation off on that, because obviously you come in as quite a young Buddhist monk in that particular situation. You're 29, I think, at the time. You come in and obviously you've got a lot to work through yourself. You're trying to work with these difficult people, probably being triggered yourself quite regularly, like all of us. Certainly for me, most of my initial years of practice was just being triggered, noticing the triggers, and then gradually, as you say, beginning to work with it and actually move your heart to them, move your love and compassion more towards those people. How can I help them? Even in the worst of situations, even in the most toxic of minds and situations, we can gradually develop this increasing compassion that understands that everyone's suffering, either suffering manifestly now or they're going to suffer soon in the future. And when you open your heart in that way, yeah, it totally changes our whole perspective. Instead of, you know, focusing on the destructive nature of what we can get caught up in, we actually think, how can I actually help this world heal everyone? And so it's a very powerful mind over time. And I know people on the podcast are listening thinking, I can't go there. Well, fine. Start with yourself. Start simply becoming free of the conflict within your mind. Become free of that inner prison that we all struggle with, of these delusions that we were talking about today. Great. and then start moving that out and start to pacify conflicts with others. And let's see over time where that goes, because the more we realize that compassion actually heals and helps everyone else, then we'll notice that's actually where I want to live from. But of course, everyone has to start with where they are. So Gentechen, thanks so much for dropping in today. I really enjoyed that conversation. Lots and lots for me, certainly, to take away from it. And I'm sure everyone on the podcast has really taken away a lot from that. So I really appreciate you dropping in. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thanks, Adam.